Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions for this weekend's card, Blades versus Lewis, with your hosts, TB Scouting MMA and
the MMA Guru, back for another hell of a card here. It's a big one as it stands at the moment. 15 fights for UFC Vegas 19 / UFC Fight Night 185 / UFC on ESPN Plus 43. Any way you want to call it is fine with me as long as you watch it. What do you think, TB?
Yeah, well, we got a main event that was already one time in the making. It's been moved off to this week due to a corona cancellation. Always unfortunate. And our co-main event, we're seeing Caitlin Vieira and Yana Kunitskaya. We'll have some good picks on that fight. I don't want to tip our hand too quickly, but it looks like we have a, you know, dare I say, a better card than the pay-per-view last week.
There's certainly more meat on the bones. You know, there's certainly more to get excited about, especially in terms of the, you know, just the main event in general. There's really a couple fights scattered throughout the card I'm really, really interested in. One of which being Dracar Close and Luis Pena, a fight that I'm really, really personally looking forward to. I'm not even sure I have the best bets for that card, but I know that my eyes will be glued to the TV, and you know that's not a main card fight. So you know when you can get me really excited about prelims, I'm ready.
Yeah, and as far as excitement goes, I think we have a lot of fights that people may not know the names necessarily, but that they're ready to bring the action, you know, fight by fight, and we see it on a consistent basis. So, as you said, 15 fights. So far, we're going to cross our fingers here that there's no shenanigans at the weigh-ins or,
you know. As we record here Thursday night.
Yeah, so we'll see how that plays out. Hopefully, we don't get any big bets here canceled, and let's get right down to work. So, opening off the card, Sergey Spivak facing Dana White Contender Series graduate Jared Vanderop, making his UFC debut, and Spivak will be giving up a little bit of size here. Spivak coming in 6'3 and Vanderas 6'4. Spivak giving up 2 inches of reach, and you know he's actually 3 years younger than Vanderas. But we've seen him 2-2 in the UFC, whereas Vanderas making his debut, and Spivak's losses, the only ones in his career, they came against two of the top 10 opponents in the UFC. So I can't hold those losses against him. I think we might be seeing a little bit of a vet lesson. You know, even Spivak's a little bit younger, he has that experience.
I don't think you're wrong at all for calling Spivak a vet here. Spivak is not necessarily somebody that I'm always looking to hang my hat on, as, I mean, his best wins are over Carlos, your boy Felipe, and Tai Tuivasa, as you so eloquently put. Marcin Tybura and Walt Harris are his two losses, and those are not shameful losses by any means. Jared Vanderas is not either of those guys. While Jared Vanderas is a good kickboxer, he checks leg kicks. The problem is that he's going to look for body locks and takedowns, and he's a real single activity striker. And that's really not going to, it's not really going to do enough for him, because when you try to grapple with Spivak, I do expect Spivak to have the grappling advantage. Only problem with Spivak is I do believe he's got questionable cardio, but I mean, I don't know what heavyweight doesn't have questionable cardio. There's really very few. Spivak, you know, tends to plan heavy on his lead leg, or both legs, honestly, have a very wide stance. But his grappling game is really, like you said, veteran, and I would say quite ahead of where Vanderas is. I do believe that I have this as part of a parlay I'd like to put out for everybody. I have the first leg of it is either Spivak here, and you can have it sub or decision, -175.
You know, actually, it's funny. I was actually leaning towards looking at taking by knockout or submission. From on tape, what I saw was Spivak has some really heavy ground and pound when he starts opening up. You know, he got this huge elbow that opened up a cut on Tuivasa before he was able to really sink in that arm triangle choke. He catches kicks well. You know, I think he's going to be able to land the takedowns here. And although Vanderas has the black belt on paper, Spivak has a little bit of a background in combat sambo. I believe he's an international master of sport. To me, seeing a +170 on a knockout or submission, it looks a little tasty to me, because I'm not sure Vanderaa, you know, coming off his contender series win and, you know, maybe a little bit happy to be there. You know, someone that I see has faced a pretty salty record of opponents and really got a lot of trouble from Hunsucker in his first round knockout, where he really just dominated him due to the vast difference in size. Hunsucker coming up a weight class to fill in on late notice on contender series. So, you know, the line kind of reflects where we're at, because Spivak minus 255, it's pretty well set, but I do agree with you. You could definitely get that in a parlay, and, you know, maybe it does go to decision, but I like the juiciness. Maybe I'll play that separate.
No, you know what? I looked before the podcast, I did look at my parlay, this same parlay I was going to give out to the viewers. I looked at the same parlay, removing the predication on the way in which Spivak wins. So I have Spivak money line and parlayed to the next fight, which I'll get into, which is part of that parlay that closes it out, which is a money line play. So it actually ends up either way plus money and in a good shape that I would feel comfortable laying it out. So if you don't like the method as much, I think you can still take my parlay.
Yeah, Spivak is going to be a leg in one of my parlays at the money line. It feels right. So it seems like we both agree on Spivak. We'll be taking him as a straight pick and, you know, using him in a parlay and even looking for a couple methods. That'll bring us along to our next fight, where it sounds like you have another bet for this one. Draco Rodriguez, another Dana White Contender Series graduate, coming in against Eamon Zahabi, Faraz's younger brother, training out of TriStar. And these guys match up pretty well, going to have the same height and reach unless we see differently at the weigh-ins. But Draco coming in 9 years younger and making his UFC debut. And Eamon Zahabi, you know, he's had a little run in the UFC, but had a little break in between dealing with injury and being away, took some time off. Yeah, so let's get down to what you saw on tape, because it sounds like you had a pretty strong play here.
Yeah, I mean, this fight will round out that second half of my parlay. I have Draco by moneyline here. Simple and easy. So if you take Draco with the money line, with Spivak money line, you get plus 110. If you take Draco with the Spivak sub or decision, you get plus 137. Why I'm on Draco here, I do think that he is the, we know that he's the younger fighter. I know he's the hungrier fighter. Eamon Zahabi, younger brother of Faraz Zahabi, you know, does the gym thing, fighting while he loves it. He's got like the James Krause situation going on. It's something that he can fall back on. It's something that, of course, he loves to do. Nobody steps inside that cage if you don't love it, but it's not what's putting food on his table right now. And Draco is a young, feisty prospect that the UFC was looking to sign well before he even got to Dana White's contender series, put on a good fight. I just think that he's going to come out and be very aggressive with Zahabi, who's shown a tendency to just be more timid, be more patient. What I see from him is that he's his brother's, he's related to his brother. He's very analytical. You know, I see the wheels churning so much in the cage, where I don't think he's as instinctual. You know, he's too busy analyzing, you know, because he spends so much time, I think, you know, watching tape, studying tape. So before I get way ahead of myself here, I'm obviously very excited. I tied him straight into a parlay. What do you think here, TB?
Well, I can't help but agree with you. Looking at Draco's background, it's not like he's just the normal 7-1 that gets called up through contender series. You know, he took his lumps against Gravely, fifth round knockout. You know, that's his only loss on record. You know, he was 13-0 amateur, 2-0 pro boxing, 9-3 amateur boxing. And, you know, this is all in Golden Gloves and ringside tournaments. So he has a lot of experience with the striking, and you can see it on the feet. He has a lot of power. And, you know, like you said, Zahabi sometimes doesn't deal well with that, and I don't see too much head movement. So I feel very comfortable with you on the parlay, minus 196 at the moment I'm seeing. And, yeah, that's definitely playable for me. You could put him with Spivak. You could find another piece to attach him to. But Yeah, my pick is Draco. I was thinking maybe you could get some sort of finish here, knockout or submission plus 230, because Draco seems to be a little bit hungrier when he comes out and fights. So, you know, I could definitely see a finish. Do you see a finish possibly, or do you think in more a decision?
Are they locked inside a cage with 4-ounce gloves?
Damn straight.
Then I always see a finish. So I think Eamon Zahavi is tough despite him getting finished. I mean, it took two spinning elbows, that second spinning elbow. I mean, I'm pretty sure his jaw was broken, right? Did that break his jaw? He was gurgling. Yeah. His jaw was like, oh yeah. I mean, he was broken.
Yeah, Frost told him, you got to take some time off now, man.
Who was that? Was that Ricardo Ramos?
Yes, the double spinning back elbows, the biggest lack of awareness in the octagon that I think I've seen
that,
in a while.
Lack of fight IQ also kind of made me a little nervous.
Yeah, he just kind of comes up on him and he didn't take any angles.
I actually don't even know if it's lack of fight IQ, because obviously he is smart. I would say maybe it's lack of fight experience.
And execution.
Yeah, I think I feel better. I feel more comfortable saying lack of fight experience. Because like, I feel like if he's watching the tape, he'd of course know that. But when you're in the heat of it, you maybe don't. It doesn't all register right away, would be my guess as somebody that hasn't been in anything past a very small childhood street fight.
I'm sure you won though, right?
I did. I put him in a headlock.
There you go.
There we go. He was only like 3 years younger, though. It was a great story.
So, speaking of putting a smaller guy in a headlock, did we perhaps see that in the Chaz Kelly versus Jamal Emmers fight? Chaz Kelly plus 190 and Jamal Emmers the favorite here at minus 230. Now, it seems like that line just keeps going and going. And Jamal Emmers 31, Skelly 35, and 10 UFC fights under Skelly's belt, 7-3 overall, where Emmers, he just came into the UFC last year, made his debut against Giga. I know you have some thoughts about that one. And then he won his next fight against Cachero, just showing, you know, that he could really up the output and really put it on someone that was a punching bag. So,
ooh, Vince Cachero, I'm quaking in my boots.
Exactly. So, you know, I think this will be a proper test for Emmers here. Skelly, you know, high school wrestling, he was 164-3. 2003 state champion, then NAIA wrestling All-American, 7th in national. So he's got the crazy wrestling background, one of the fastest submissions in history. And yeah, I do think he'll give him a tough test here.
Yeah, I mean, Skelly is a UFC vet that hasn't been very active as of late. He had 9 UFC fights between 2014 and 2017, going 6-3, and has only had 2 since. A no contest to Bobby Moffitt, which was like a really weird fight, where he almost pretty much got submitted, was probably going to eventually get submitted if the ref didn't probably call it too soon. I mean, they said that it was called too soon, so it's a no contest. And a unanimous decision win over Jordan Griffin, who Jordan Griffin has some of the more questionable fight IQ in the UFC. Went to try to take Skelly down a couple times when he was starting to piece him up on the feet. Like you said, Skelly with the decorated wrestling background, prefers to be grappling than striking, has at least one takedown landed in his last 5 fights in a row. So I think that that's going to be obvious, a main part of his game plan. Chaz Skelly really reminds me of Ben Askren. Maybe not as, definitely not as good at the wrestling, but similarly in the grappling and the lack of real striking, as he just gets hit in the face and tries, as he comes in, as he tries to grab a hold of you. Emmer's very athletic, quick, confident striker. You know, I do feel that he got the job done over Giga. I'm not going to sit here and cry about it. I think it was close. I think Giga ran away with the first round. And I do think that Emmers did enough to win 2-3. I think that's an impressive win, or at least at the very least an impressive showing. And then he beat the snot out of Vince Cachero, who we're going to have to – I'm going to look more at his background tape for next week, because he's fighting Robbie Lawrence. I don't even know who he's fighting. He's fighting somebody next week. All of that to be said – -235, which has gone. What is it now? -260.
Well, it depends on where you look.
Pretty early in the week.
Yeah, it's -230 on FanDuel, -250 on DraftKings. So
okay, so it stayed around there. So it's -230. It's a little overpriced. Obviously, it's sat the same all week because I think people think it's a little sketchy and a little overpriced. Can Skelly get it done? Yeah. Can Emmers win by KO? Yeah. I think it's somewhere where I sit right now. I'm going to be steadfastly watching weigh-ins. I'll be circling Emmers as it sits currently. But Skelly by sub or decision at +235 or +230 is not a bad play.
Yeah, it certainly seems like it's his path to victory because Emmers should be winning the exchanges on the feet. You know, Emmers has got...
Skelly has more paths to victory, which is crazy, but Emmers is actually the more likely one to be victorious, if that even makes sense.
Sure. Well, it's the athletic differential and, you know, you can see it in the explosion of Emmers wrestling and, you know, his ground and pound when he can get on top. He definitely has shown some impressive ability to create some damage. His losses to Erosa, you know, is a lapse in judgment, and Thiago Moises, a round five knockout back in 2016, you know, he seemed to not do so well with a guy that can match his athleticism and striking on the feet. So I don't think he has to worry about that here. He does show good takedown defense, and Skelly can be rather accepting of takedowns.
He totally is. That's a huge problem. He would much rather try to go for some bullshit guillotine and get taken down than try to stand up through a takedown. And that is something I saw on tape. That is something that makes me very nervous in this fight. And it makes it why I would not really play Skelly straight up, like confidently or anything. I'm just, you know, I mean, there's money to be, it's, you know, trying to find the money is kind of tough in a fight like this.
For this one, I probably will stay away. Whereas, you know, the most attractive line is probably Emmers by decision +135. Because at least you can get plus money. And, you know, he probably can land more strikes and he might be able to reverse position with, you know, more explosive.
I worry about Emmer's gas tank. You know, I think if it goes to decision, I think the longer this fight goes, the more it leans towards Skelly. Because I don't think that if it's a 15-minute fight, that all 15 minutes are on the feet. And if we assume that all of the fight's not on the feet, then I think at some point Skelly's on the ground doing work, you know, wrestling, making Emmers tired, filling up those big muscles with lactic acid, grappling with him, trying to choke him out. We've seen Emmers get finished by choke early in his career, but it has happened.
He's someone that's really coming into his prime at 31 years old. You know, Emmers and Skelly. Emmers actually has two more fights in his career. And although Skelly has more of those in the UFC, Emmers has 10 fights that have gone to decision and he's 8-2 in those. And whereas Skelly is 5-2 in 7 fights. So it's actually Emmers that has been going the distance more. And I just think that if there is someone that, you know, could end up controlling it, due to output on the feet, and in addition, being able to, you know, kind of match the output on the ground. So,
right.
You know, I think that's how I'm going to lean is Emmers by decision +135. And I don't think you're going to get a better price than that at the moment.
You sold me. I'm circling Emmers. Best bet was Emmers by KO +310. That's the play I'm sending out for this fight,
which is interesting because Skelly's got only one knockout loss in his career, but you know that doesn't mean it can't happen again, especially against someone that's this explosive. So if you want to play the double chance, that's also.
And just so you know, the one knockout loss in his career was just three fights ago, you know, he pretty much got finished in the Bobby Moffitt fight, and he hasn't fought since 2019. So I remain entitled to change my pick come weigh-in day, because anything can happen. If I see something on the scale I don't like, I could easily switch either direction hard.
Yeah, this isn't one that I'm going to be including in any parlays. I'll leave it at that. So
definitely not.
The price is a little too wide on this one. But I think if anything, if you're trying to find the plus money plays, we gave them to you. So to our next fight, and to be fair, it's a 15-fight card. You know, scouting time gets short as the week goes. And, you know, watching some stuff on the regional circuit, especially, you know, down in Australia or anything like that, it's a little bit tougher to gauge someone's ability. So to introduce, we have Shannon Dobson, career 4-4 versus Casey O'Neill, career 5-0. And to me, you're getting a 31-year-old in Dobson training at elevation versus a 23-year-old O'Neill, who's been all around Tiger Muay Thai. And now, because of the pandemic, training at Extreme Couture, that could be something that affects her being in a different environment for the first time for her training camp. And there's just so many unknowns in this fight that I'm going to take my hands up and just say, you know, if you have to take someone and circle them, you know, sure, O'Neill might be the attractive way. If you have to throw $5, you know, maybe Shauna Dobson at plus 130 right now is what's piquing your interest. But to me, I'm just going to advise to stay away, because I couldn't get a good enough read on this fight due to the limited tape.
100%. Couldn't said it any better. I would say if you had to bet like a degenerate, dog or pass. You no reason to put your money on Casey O'Neill. I mean, and then stay small, really. Really, honestly, heart to heart, friend to friend, don't bet this fight.
God, just, Devin, you know it's going to end up on my bet sheet. Don't even.
Don't bet this fight.
See, that's the thing. I always say, oh, I got to stay away from this one. And then all of a sudden, one of those little, flies out there.
If we see Casey O'Neill, who's like a smoke show, show up on weigh-in and she looks terrible, I mean, maybe we you know, we can go hard for Dobson, or, you know, Dodson, or vice versa. But I don't, there's no reason. There's so many fights. There's so many more fights coming. You know, it's, forget it.
And speaking about uncertainty, you know, as we leave that one kind of up in the air, our next fighter, Rafael Alves and Pat Sabatini, this one came together on short notice. And yeah,
same idea. Great, going to be a great fight, interesting fight. Two prospects. Pat Sabatini out of where is he out of? He's out of CFFC, which is a good promotion. Pat Sabatini, who had a win on, Rafael Alves, who had a win on Dana White Contender Series. You know, he looked really good. I watched Rafael Alves fight in Titan FC against Felipe Douglas. It was a tough fight, man. He got rocked in that first round, came back, fought hard, and Kamaru Usman was actually commentating, doing a pretty good job. Highlight KO. I mean, it was a nice counter. And, he shows some real talent. I mean, I can see why the UFC signed him, but again, in a fight like this, man, short notice, haven't seen these guys face off, like, I'll save your money right now.
Yeah, we'll hold off. And the only thing of interest that I possibly saw as I went through the, you know, the paper scouting here and putting together some stuff was Sabatini, 10 submissions on his record, black belt jiu-jitsu. Alves, 7 submissions on his record. I believe he's also a black belt jiu-jitsu. Impressive guillotine against Flores, but I don't think you pull off something like that against Sabatini. However, looking at their career losses, Sabatini, 1 knockout, 2 decision. Rafael Alves, 3 knockout, 6 submission. The fact that you could get Sabatini for plus 650 for a submission right now, I mean, that's extremely interesting to me, because, you know, just like last week with Marquez at plus 950 for the submission, you're looking at someone that has the ability. It's probably their path to victory. He's probably coming in on short notice with not a complete training camp. Maybe he was staying ready. He keeps his Instagram private, it seems, so can't really get a good look inside and see how everything's going. And, you know, for that, at plus 164, maybe it's worth a shot on the dog, because this fight could play out a lot closer than, you know, Rafael Alves at minus 196. You might end up sweating your money if he's caught in a submission here. So, hey, take a step back, wait for the weigh-in, and if Sabatini comes in looking good, I think I might pull the trigger on that submission.
Sounds great.
Yeah. So now let's get down to what just might be a fight of the night candidate here. We have Nate Landwehr, 14-3, coming in against Julian Arosa, 24-9. Arosa is going to have a nice height advantage here, coming in at 6'1" against Landwehr, who's at 5'9", and Arosa having a 2.5-inch reach advantage, so not as, you know, pronounced there. And he's also a year younger than Landwehr, but has just so happened to be on his third stint here in the UFC. So he brings plenty of experience to the table. We saw a great comeback win against Woodson. He had that knockout, like we spoke of before, head kick on Emmers. And, you know, then you take a look at, you know, here he is now at Extreme Couture and 10th Planet in Vegas. So he's definitely getting some better training now in his third stint. And Landwehr, you know, a bit of a fan favorite over in M1, three-time champion, 16-4 amateur record. So this guy's been around, even though his 14-3 doesn't quite stand up to the 24-9. I think this is going to be a banger because Landwehr doesn't mind being hit. He loves showboating. He's got Dana on the broadcast, you know, in his last fight as he's beating up Elkins with that, you know, just looking for the bonus money. It's so good.
So first things first, for me, this fight should not be at the Apex. This fight should be at a Chili's parking lot, without a doubt. That's first thing first.
Shirtless, of course, but yes, the location is very important.
What I saw from Nate, he's got good wrestling and takedown defense, but he has no head movement. He's a tough brawler with really low fight IQ. Arosa is coming off of the major third round submission upset win after getting dropped in that third round on 4 or 5 days notice against Sean Woodson. So he went 0-3 in the UFC following his Dana White Contender Series win against Jamal Emmers, which was just an unbelievable highlight KO. I mean, that was crazy. And then, I mean, in his defense, when you look at who he fought on that and lost those three fights, Devontae Smith, who we just saw, and he's a really hot prospect, Grant Dawson, who's a hot prospect, and Julio Arce, who's, I probably butchered his name, but another hot prospect who we are yet to see, was supposed to fight Valiev. So he gets cut, goes out, wins a fight, comes back in, and then finishes Woodson as a huge underdog. So for me here, one of the things that I really liked, again, he does keep, Arosa does keep his hands very low and throws kicks without covering his face, which is something I don't really like. But he does have good footwork and movement. He does use a lot of nonstop pressure. And what I saw him change against Woodson, which he didn't do in the Arce fight, is when he was using his pressure, he actually committed to throwing against Woodson, whereas he wasn't committing in the Arce fight or the Dawson fight. He just wouldn't commit to throwing. So while this fight is going to be a barn burner, and really you could find yourself passing, I find myself leaning with the underdog and the higher fight IQ. I think he's going to try to keep this fight a little bit more. I like the guy that's going to move his head. He's going to try not to get hit as much. And if Landwehr, I mean, just completely crashes forward and makes Arosa freeze up and regress back to that place where he's not having any output, Landwehr could win this fight. But that being said, the fighter I saw fight Sean Woodson should beat Nate Landwehr. I mean, Landwehr has no head movement. He's not as technically sound. And this fight should stay a brawl for most of the time. I like Arosa. And I think I like him by decision.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not too keen on his side on this fight because I found myself leaning towards Landwehr, but, you know,
fight
really,
to go decision plus 104. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, because I think they each, you know, even though Arosa's got 5 knockout losses, I don't see Landwehr as the person that has big time knockout power. And
he couldn't finish Elkins.
Yeah, sure. And then, you know, when you look at his chin, Landwehr, You know, he did have that ugly knockout from Burns, but I don't see Arosa producing a similar unseen strike on him.
He's a volume striker anyway. Yeah. It's not his game.
So I really like that to go to decision. You know, you said plus 104. I think that's where I'm looking. And, you know, I really like the guy yelling out, Dana. So at the moment, I might be picking Landwehr because he's just a psycho and he really knows how to put his foot on the gas when necessary. And he's going to get hit. That's you know, something that you can't take away. But I don't think he's someone that can get submitted here, which is Arosa's, you know, probably his biggest path to victory. 11 submissions 100%. In his career. And, you know, Woodson really pieced them up until, you know, he was like, wait a second, Woodson has no ground game.
So, yeah, I would say as a pod, that's one of our best plays this week that we feel comfortable sending out. Fight to go the distance, plus 104. I do like that, honestly, better than my Arosa by decision. I mean, I try hard to handicap the side for not only myself, but, you know, for everybody. So I think that is where I ended up, but I feel much better not having to pick a side. That sounds great.
But it looks like on our circles here and just who we're going to be picking straight up, we might be going head to head. Let's see what the lands look like. So, you know, on to the next one. We got Eddie Wineland, the veteran, coming in against John Castaneda, looking to improve on his UFC debut, where he gave a decent account of himself. And it looks like these guys match up well. Wineland giving up an inch of reach, but, you know, not too much besides that. But the, you know, 7 years the veteran to Castaneda, who's only 28 years old still. And, you know, I don't see Castaneda coming out of a big gym here. And, you know, it still looks like he's got a pretty well-developed game, a good switch stance. He shows a lot of kicks, gets to the liver, and a lot of good leg kicks inside and out. And that's something I'm going to be looking at here because Wineland definitely fights with a wide stance and, you know, he has a tendency to get kicked. I just don't know that Castaneda really uses, you know, the volume as much as he should. He's very hittable. And Castaneda has a wide stance himself. And he's not so good working off his back foot and countering, where Wineland's going to come out and take the center of the octagon. So, actually, you know, we could be seeing another very exciting fight here. And, you know, do you see yourself leaning any other direction?
I love Eddie Wineland. I love Eddie Wineland. I love the WEC. I love those old school guys. It hurt my heart to see Eddie Wineland get KO'd like that by Sugar Sean, man. I loved Sugar at the time until, you know, he became just the biggest cock and balls ever. And not in a good way. I mean,
talk
just
about turning the heel.
God, turning the heel in the worst way. I mean, like Jorge Masvidal type of turning the heel in the worst way. Just awful, man. And listen, Castaneda is, you know, one of those top, you know, under 30 prospects that we currently have in the UFC. Well-rounded, you know, didn't get finished by Nathaniel Wood, which I see as a plus coming in to take that fight in July. He has good footwork, uses lots of leg kicks. He's lost three of his last four, which, you know, is just like Eddie Wineland, but, you know, that doesn't really make me feel great about Castaneda. You know, losing a unanimous decision, losing a split decision, winning against a 15-5 guy by arm triangle, and then getting your shot in the UFC. I mean, if he can beat Eddie Wineland here, I mean, he deserves by all means to be in the UFC. I do have a play on this fight, and it's part of another parlay. It's my final parlay. And I actually tie this fight to the main event. So my play on this fight, and it is the clearest thing that I see. It's as clear as day and it's juiced. Over 1.5. Listen, can we feel nervous about Eddie Wineland's chin? Sure. Can anybody get a quick finish in this UFC? Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I'd have to sit there with egg on my face. That being said, I do think that he finished Grigory Popov later in that second round. You know, that was crazy how much that guy Popov took. Sean O'Malley, that fight ended early, but that was Sean O'Malley, man. I mean, that was crazy. That's really not on the table right now, kind of as you said. Nathaniel Wood couldn't finish Castaneda. So I don't think As much as I love Eddie, I don't think that he's going to get a signature finish here. Castaneda's, other than that win that he had to get him into the UFC, those three losses all went to decision. And his win before that was a decision. So I just like over 1.5. I think it's a good play. I think it goes there. Even if the fight does have a finish, I don't think it comes till later on.
I can definitely agree with that. I think Wineland coming off that KO loss is going to, you know, he's going to come out aggressive. And the one thing that worries me is he does love keeping those hands down. But I don't see Castaneda as the early type of finisher. And, you know, for that, Wineland at plus 106, that's worth a look for me, because he's going to be the guy on the front foot, the guy applying the pressure. And in the small cage, he might be the guy landing those combos. And with the boxing, that generally gets a lot more look from the judges than the leg kicks, even though I feel like the leg kicks should just get just as much. It's unfortunate because they don't. So in all likelihood, you know, we'll see Wineland, you know, moving the head and hopefully being able to keep his movement going, even though he gets leg kicks. So I'll be taking, you know, the veteran underdog here to maybe teach Castaneda a little lesson.
Yeah, to be clear, I did not pick a side. If you force me to pick right now, I guess I'm taking Eddie too, because I love him. But I don't know. I want to see weigh-ins. I hate to keep saying that before the pod. I hate being that guy.
Play. It's over.
We're the only sport, man. What other sport is like that? You know, you can bet football or basketball, whatever, a week out, whatever. It doesn't really matter. And like, you don't have to worry about what they're going to weigh in at and all this stuff. Like, it's just crazy. The weigh in is such a huge factor. I give any capper so much credit that if they put money out on a fight a month out, you're crazy. I respect that so much.
Well, I think if you're strong on a side, it doesn't hurt. And, you know, knowing a person's history with weigh-ins is also important. So with some of these other guys,
it's so much assuming. I think so many times these fights can be so close. I think so many times these fights are made or break on the scale, what you do in those last 7 days, especially in a fight like Wineland and Castaneda, which could be just so, you know, close. Like, it could come down to who's got the juice in the last 3 minutes. It's really crazy. I do love this sport so much.
Yeah. So we'll move along to
another crazy fight, another insane, crazy barn burner type of fight, man. This fight's going to be crazy.
Yeah, Drakkar Klose, minus 174 against the late notice opponent, Luis Pena, stepping in. And, you know, it definitely makes for a much more interesting matchup for me than Jay Herbert. But I still see, you know, Klose as someone that's faced a higher level opponent in the UFC. You know, Pena's going to have a big advantage here in the height and reach. He's got 6 inches of height, 6 inches of reach, and he's 6 years younger. So, you know, the number of the devil, 666, you know, those are all big advantages for Pena in that regard. And he is 4-3 in his UFC career, where Klose is 5-2.
But southpaw, right? Pena is a southpaw, no?
He likes to switch it up. You know, he's got some slick stuff as far as, you know, some front kicks and all that. But he is heavy on that lead leg. And Drakkar Klose, we've seen him, you know, land a lot of low calf kicks. And he does have some good power. He wobbled Dariush before eventually, you know, a few seconds later succumbing to the hooks.
I love Dariush, and I love that fight. That was one of the best. You know, somebody says they don't like UFC fights. Put that fight on.
Yeah.
And oh my goodness.
Yeah. So
what a fight.
We have a guy coming in on short notice and another guy that fights the decision. You know, he has 5 decision wins, 1 decision loss, only 1 loss by knockout in his last fight. I don't think Klose is coming out here looking to do anything but put Pena away early. And if he doesn't, I don't know how long Pena's gas tank lasts. And he didn't respond well to power in the Worthy fight. He put himself in a really bad position with a takedown that he shot from far away, transitioned, left his head in a terrible position, gets caught in the guillotine and choked out. And, You know,
I love violent Bob Ross.
Yeah, I really like him as a fighter. I really like him as a guy. I just think this is a...
I love his story, too.
Yeah.
About finding his brother or whatever. That was crazy.
Yeah, that was awesome. And I hate to pick against him. I feel like I've picked for him in almost every fight. And
yeah,
I don't want to say I'm just doing it because of the Worthy fight. But, you know, I got to say, Drakkar Klose is better than Kama Worthy. And, you know, as far as the styles go, you know, Klose likes getting inside. And you know, dealing out some punishment. And although he hasn't been able to get the finish before, I think, you know, there's an outside chance he could find something here. So I'm not really too willing to pull the trigger on a bet on this fight myself.
So Bob Ross has had weight cut issues in the past, no? Has he missed weight?
I don't have anything in my notes, but that doesn't mean that it didn't happen. He's had a lot of fights, and he has a really big frame for the division.
So, again, something... Yeah, he missed weight in the Steven Peterson fight. I have it here.
Okay.
Steve Peterson, I believe he missed weight by 3 pounds there in that fight. So, again, a skinny guy that I do worry about him making weight. And, again, has Klose been somebody that's been... has a weight thing?
Not something I saw, but hey, I miss Pena, right?
Fair enough. Again, I'm not sure. Two guys I'd love to see stand and face off. I don't think that unless Klose gets the KO, which again is going to be ground and pound or some sort of freak occurrence, I like Klose by decision plus 125. I mean, if you have a guy that has been to decision other than the last fight of the night performance against a top 7 lightweight. He's been to decision 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I mean 7, 8 times in a row. Drakkar Klose. I don't think that snaps now. I think Violent Bob Ross has a lot to prove after that Kama Worthy loss. So I think by all means he's going to do everything to not get finished. And I don't think Klose is the guy that's exactly going to make that wish too difficult to grant.
Yeah, sounds like we're both on Klose here. You got to go into decision. And, you know, me, I'm not too sure. But I do think that you could use Klose as a parlay piece, even though I might avoid that in particular myself. The next fight, we have Danny Chavez against Jared Gordon. And
Jared Flash Gordon.
Jared Flash Gordon. You know, I always forget to include the nicknames here. It does make it more fun, especially when
it
you
can
got
be,
some
especially
good ones.
When Danny Chavez is the Colombian Warrior.
Yeah, I mean that one's all right. That's not as creative, but but this should make for another exciting fight. And although it's not the biggest of names, or should I say the flashiest of names, if we're gonna get, but. Yeah, Gordon, someone that hasn't been afraid to get in there and mix it up, as evidenced by his 4 career knockout losses, the only way he's ever lost any fight in his career. And
yes,
it kind of shows up when you listen to him in interviews. It's unfortunate because, you know, I saw him interviewing with James Lynch. He has this big bump over his eye. And, you know, there's just a couple times where he mixes up what he's saying. And he says, oh, I get hit in the head a lot. And I'm like, damn, man. And James Lynch is like, oh, you said it, not me. And I'm like,
yikes.
Yeah. And,
I didn't,
you know,
that. I watched that. I might have to change my bet here.
Yeah. It made me pause a little bit, but then people might be a little hot on Chavez. You know, his win over Brown, a much lower level grappler than what we're going to see in Gordon. And, you know, finally, Gordon, you know, something that you actually tuned me on to, he's fighting at a lower weight class, finally, one that he finally belongs in here. Coming in against Chavez, his 3 career losses have come against opponents with a combined 20-1 record. So Chavez actually 1 year older than Gordon, although he's only 1-0 career in the UFC. He's coming out of MMA Masters, so you know he's got those punishing low calf kicks and all that. And, you know, he could provide a little bit of difficulty for Gordon if Gordon can't get a takedown here.
Yeah, that could definitely be a problem. Gordon, I've seen, is somebody that just gets hit too much. He's taken a lot of damage throughout his career. I mean, had that crazy face surgery after Charles Oliveira, I mean, pulverized him in Brazil. Yeah, I really like Gordon here. I find myself going back and forth. I hate to be a broken record, especially on this card. I mean, it's really a theme throughout every card, I promise, but I really sound like a broken record here. I need to see the weigh-in. I need to see what Jared Gordon looks like at his 145 here. This is his first time at featherweight. He's 2-0 at catchweight, 3-2 at lightweight in the UFC, or 2-3 at lightweight in the UFC, I should say. So if being 2-0 at catchweight, you know, down a little bit lower is any indication, he could end up being the bigger guy here against Chavez. And, you know, if he can end up getting a takedown, I think it'll go well for him.
Yeah, small octagon too, so that should help in that regard.
You know, I think Gordon has somebody that is, as time has continued to go on, as he's somebody that talks about his battle with sobriety. As his brain continues to get more clear in that regard, I think he's become a more more well-rounded, more you know, better fighter in that respect. So we'll see here. I really, like I said, I want to see how he looks. Danny Chavez, you know, not much to see coming off that UFC win. In his UFC win in his debut against TJ Brown, who, you know, TJ Brown is, I don't know, not necessarily all that impressive.
Well, he came in with a lot of hype and really didn't live up to it.
Yeah, lost to Jordan Griffin before that. We've already mentioned him. Had a bunch of losses on his career. I mean, he lost to Bobby Moffitt in RFA. I mean, he is not the bee's knees. He's got to fight booked in May against Kai Kamaka. And I'll tell you right now, I lean Kamaka there.
Okay.
I picked Kai Kamaka in his last fight. Oh, no, I did not. I picked against Kai Kamaka. I picked Jonathan Pierce in that fight. I circled Pierce and I picked Pierce. That was a good pick. I like that one. Anyway, I digress a lot. Yeah, I end up on Gordon at the moment.
For me, I would jump on it right away if, you know, we were looking at a plus 200. But you're right, a plus 116. Let's make sure he looks good coming down in his new weight class. And then, you know, we can make a full play on it. Because I think Chavez is going to be a good fighter. It's just that, you know, this might be somewhere where he hits a little speed bump. Because
this is make or break time for him. No, 33?
Sure, he's fighting for a lot. He sounds like he's ready to make some big moves. And he definitely sounds like an intelligent fighter, and he knows that Gordon's going to be going for the takedowns, and he has the wherewithal to probably defend a bunch of those. I'm just curious.
If he can.
Yeah, Gordon has the experience, so I'm very excited to see it.
And you kind of alluded to it at the very beginning of the podcast. These are the kind of fights that make this card better than last week's card. There's just more impactful, more exciting matchups.
That'll close out the prelims right there, because that seems to be at the moment, unless, you know, we have some, you know, shaking around here. That seems to be the feature prelim at the moment, given that they moved our next fight, Andrei Arlovsky versus Tom Aspinall, you know, to the main card, right?
Oh, yeah.
So here we go. Let's kick it off, because talking about a prospect versus a gatekeeper at the moment, we have Andrei Arlovsky, who's going to be making his 50th appearance in the professional fighting in MMA. Giving up some height and reach here. Aspinall going to be the bigger fighter, 6'5 to the 6'3, and going to have an inch reach advantage. And Aspinall also 27 years old to Arlovsky's, you know, 42 or 41. And 19-13 for Arlovsky's career in the UFC. We could go back, piece through all those fights, and it would tell a very long story. And, you know, I think I'd like to focus on where he's been recently. 5-9 in his last 14. And he was probably on the way out of the UFC when he picked up a huge win over Felipe Lins and followed it up with another huge win over Tanner Bozer. So now Arlovsky's got this new standing as, you know, the old bird in the division, and Aspinall's here to try to take his shine off.
Yeah, no, I think you've teed up the fight really well. Andrei Arlovsky, man, you know, the tale is that he gets finished. The tale is that he's got no chin left. But you know what, man? What is it, 12 fights? Out of 12 fights, he's been finished in two of them. And they were by Ngannou and Rozenstruik. Those are the best power punchers in the division. So yeah, he lost a split decision to Augusto Sakai. And he lost a decision to Tai Tuivasa. But you know what, man? I really like Tom Aspinall. I would have taken Tom Aspinall had I not, you know, continued to grow as a better here and as a handicapper, as at least as I try to. I cannot in good faith bet Tom Aspinall -265. I've tried. I've looked at it every which way. I can't do it. And here's why. He was around the same odds coming in against Jake Collier, who we've agreed is pretty much not UFC caliber. Then he knocks out Alan Baddou in a minute and 30 seconds. And Alan Baddou is, again, probably not UFC caliber. So he knocks out one guy, and now he should be the same odds as he was in relation to Jake Collier as he is to now Andre Arlovsky. So what's the answer? That this guy is the bee's knees, and he's getting another KO here, and it should be Aspinall KO plus 100, and that's the play, and it's easy money, and Aspinall's just going to put the old lion out? I've seen it too many times that these guys that the UFC really likes, they don't win. We saw it with Muneer Lizez. We've seen it with last week with Macy Barber, with Amanda Ribas. I'm not getting bitten by the dog here. Yeah, should Aspinall be favored? For sure. Arlovsky hasn't been favored in I don't even know how many fights. That being said, plus 210 or on Arlovsky plus at decision at plus 360, I mean, my God, I'm taking a swing. And a light one, but that's the play because there's no value to me in Tom Aspinall. Tom Aspinall gets a highlight KO, puts himself on the map. I tip my hat to him, and I hope he gets another fight real soon. But I just can't bet my money on it. I can't do it.
So I hate to be the bearer of bad premonitions here, but the last time you clapped about something, it didn't go so well. So
did I? What did I clap about last time?
Pollyanna Viana getting a win.
Ooh, she did get the win.
Yeah. So to turn this around on its head, where I do agree with you on a lot of these points, the thing that holds me up on taking Aspinall KO is this is a large step up in competition. I do agree the line is probably too wide. I'm going to be avoiding parlaying him for that exact reason. But Aspinall, you know, he's been there. He's got this crazy jiu-jitsu and wrestling background. British champion, going all the way back to 2010, he's been competing. He's got a 9-0 amateur record. He's 1-0 in pro boxing. He sparred with Tyson Fury. Everyone, you know, talks about that. It was cool. 2-0 pro Muay Thai. And, you know, this is someone that's obviously been in there a lot, even if it hasn't necessarily been in mixed martial arts. So to me, I see someone that's actually a potential title contender moving forward. This is someone that has real heavyweight size. He's 27.
Wow.
You know, he hasn't been getting beat up forever because he's been training all these different disciplines. You know, he took his two losses, a heel hook submission and a DQ for a 12-6 elbow. And to me, the biggest thing I see that really gets me worried is at some point he might be taking a UFC loss because he doesn't keep his hands up, you know, often enough. He gets it up sometimes, but he'll just get caught getting a little lazy and getting those hands down and, you know, feeling comfortable, getting the distance, like he's got a good read on his opponent. And that's the only thing that makes me a little nervous as far as he's going to get caught with a big counter here from Arlovsky at some point. I don't think he gets knocked out, but I think he gets scared off of putting on the huge pressure and pace. And I think this fight might go to decision. This might be the one where everyone says, oh, Aspinall, round one KO. He's going to knock out Arlovsky. And I think you have a great point. I really do. So to me, I'm looking to play a decision for Aspinall. Well, the fight to go the distance is plus 140. So, yeah.
And so maybe I end up there.
That would be my play if I don't end up feeling great about Aspinall after the weigh-in and the face-off. Yeah, well,
he's gonna not, look like
he,
a brick
he, nah, he doesn't end up jacked. He doesn't end up ripped. Well, the thing about him is he's just he's going to be the bigger guy, and he's so nimble on his feet. So I don't think you're going to be like, oh my God, this guy looks like Ngannou on the scale or something like that. But I think Arlovsky probably will have a better physique on the scale coming out of American Top Team. They got some crazy regimens down there. And you know, you'll see the same thing with Alexei Oleinik coming in great shape as well. So I think that given that great shape that they're going to come in, I could see Aspinall fighting to his first, you know, career decision for a win or a first career decision at all. And it'll be nice to see him getting tested in those deep waters. And I still feel he's going to win, but I'm going to stay away from a parlay because, yeah.
Yeah, I'm telling you right now, if I take a little flyer on Arlovsky by decision and we get to decision, I'm happy. That means directionally, strategically, the way we are handicapping this, right. At least I saw it right in that respect. If I end up taking the shot on the wrong side at juicy money, and again, staying light, not being a complete degenerate crazy person, I think it's worth it. Because again, listen, if you bet Aspinall by decision and you get to that decision, I mean, God bless you, man. That's a ballsy pick.
I think that's why I wouldn't play Aspinall decision itself.
Yeah, I think I really like what'd you say, +140 for it to go to decision?
I don't know. See,
what's it
me,
like over two and
a
half?
Do you think the fight's going to end inside the distance or do you not? Because sometimes I get to way too cute trying to pick this over, under. Is the fight going to decision or is it not? Because otherwise, you're just playing with time, and we don't know shit, you know?
I would say I agree a lot of the time. All right, so that being said, FanDuel has it over 1.5 at -168. That's interesting. Not, you know, I wish there was an over. Oh, wait, hang on. What about this? Fight to start round, fight to start round 3 -108. So I actually, what I'm saying? So
heavyweight
that's
fights, you're getting
that's not really that bad.
Portions. How often do we really see?
Do you get third round knockout in the heavyweights?
I mean, we're talking about the guys with, you know, Aspinall's never been there. Do I see him carrying all that?
Listen, I'm all about finding value in cashing tickets. I'm not worried about, like, if I can get good value and have to worry for less time.
Well, that's the thing. If you think it's going to go to decision, you could play something under that and do an over, and you want to give up a little bit of the money, that's fine. I just hate if I think it's going to end inside the distance. And a great example would be the Volkov versus Overeem. I thought it was going to end inside the distance, but I still played to start round 3. If I think there's going to be a knockout, why am I playing around with that? So that was a lesson that I learned recently that just it's turning me off to if I think something's going to happen, you can't play a prop that goes against it because it just it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I do like your correlated thinking. you're smarter than me in that respect, but that's why why you're my co-host. Sure. That's why I recruited you.
So we have I think at that point it sounds like you're going to be taking Aspinall here, and it sounds like I'm going to be it sounds like you're taking Arlovsky, and sounds like I'll be taking Aspinall. But I could definitely see you
switching a
circle
on fight day for sure. I'm liable for that, but I will not be placing money on Tom Aspinall. I can't see that happening.
So
that will not
be. Another fight that could end up being a pretty good one is going to be Nasruddin Imavov versus Philip Hawes. This fight got taken away from us and brought back. Hawes had a staph infection, I believe I heard, was on his interview, and really wanted to make sure he was 100% before getting back. So I think you're dealing with guys that actually have the same exact record in 9-2. Imavov is going to be the taller guy, but he's given up 2 inches of reach. Imavov 25 and Hawes 31. Hawes really put in the work on the regionals here, fighting a lot of big names, Andrew Sanchez, Julian Marquez. His wins recently have come against, not the biggest of names, but his transition over to Sanford MMA has really made a much cleaner striker out of Philip Hawes. And I know we broke down this fight a while ago. This was before the Conor debacle. So I feel like I've taken a little bit of a different approach to this fight, seeing all the early money come in on Imovov, and we had it at plus 155 at one point. Now it opens back up. They're near dead money. And I'm getting this feeling that, you know, maybe people are just looking for a reason to fade Hawes, where this actually might be where he goes on a nice little run.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. Hawes is so incredibly athletic and powerful. He had the quick performance on Dana White's Contender Series and then had a even quicker performance on UFC 254 against Jacob Malkoon. The guy was 4-0. I don't know what that proves, if anything, other than the guy is a brick shithouse and he's fast and powerful. But we kind of knew these things already. It really tough. Imovov has a wide stance. He's low hand, very Wonder Boy Thompson-like, karate style, really strange. He beat Jordan Williams in his UFC debut by decision. Jordan Williams, a cool dude, got the diabetes that, you know, so he can't cut weight or whatever, so he weighed in 182. Man, I liked Imovov, again, at plus 150. I start to see what you're saying, that the line opens even, and then all of a sudden the public is just – I see a lot of cappers, you know, talking that they want on Imovov. Man, I just – it's a tough one. I saw Imovov get hit with so many shots against in his last fight against Jordan Williams. So, I mean, if Hawes connects with any of those, you're going to sleep. I mean, I just – the only way that he doesn't is if he, I don't know, just takes him down, keeps him.
Yeah, and one of the,
I don't know.
Yeah, I think that Hawes actually, for my money, looked much better on the scale than Imovov did when they weighed in last time. And that actually made me a little nervous having a bet out on Imovov for a little while. And actually listening to an interview, it sounded like Hawes might be interested in going down weight in the future and fighting at 170. So I thought that was interesting in that he might actually not have that tough of a weight cut, whereas Imovov is this tall, long guy. And the second weight cut, you know, he didn't look great the first time. You know, maybe he looks a little better this time, but I don't feel comfortable, you know, laying money on him. And for the reasons that I wanted to bet Imovov in the first fight, you know, it makes me a little nervous thinking more about the process at Sanford MMA and how they get their fighters to fight with better IQ, like you saw it in Derek Brunson versus Edmund Shabazian, or Derek Brunson versus Ian Heinisch, compared to his early career adventures where he was just running face first and getting knocked out. And Hawes really didn't know how to manage his energy and really just continually shot for takedowns in the beginning of the fight. Ever since he came back, you know, with Sanford, I see him working on his feet. And when that doesn't work, that's when he starts looking for other options. And, you know, that right there, you know, maybe I overlooked that a little bit when I was first scouting this fight. And I'm actually going to go ahead and play the over 1.5. I think this fight might go the distance, but I'm a little nervous playing it. And like you talked about before, like, so listen, if you want to follow me off a bridge here, I actually might play to go the distance, you know, at the end of it, because plus 215, you know, I think that there's, you know, about a third chance that this could go the distance. These are a couple of younger guys, fresh chins. I think it could happen. But over 1.5, minus 126?
I do. I think so, too. I just think that if it's going the distance, that's sure, working against.
You don't have
Hawes
to worry about a side if you're doing that. And why?
That's true.
We saw a few things earlier in career with Hawes that made us worry about his gas tank. But like I'm talking about that mental aspect, maybe we're worrying about something that might not be an issue.
I guess I am kind of worried
but
about his gas tank.
But basing that off of historical data, that based off of a stylistic change that we have seen.
I just know that Imovov is really young at 24 years old. So his improvement from fight to fight as a young prospect hopefully should be something marketably to the point that we can't measure it. Like, he should be getting better fight to fight. So, you know, that is something I would be hopeful for if you're
Imavov supporter.
I was sold on Imavov, but I'm getting a lot of pushback in my mind the more that this fight comes back, and I don't feel as confident, and I don't have as good a feel at this moment. So we'll move along to Alexei Oleinik and Chris Daukaus. And this seems to be kind of a pattern on this card. Heavyweights who are a little bit of a gatekeeper against the guy that's up and coming. This is our third heavyweight fight of the night. And Daukaus, you know, 2-0 in the UFC now. Knockouts in the first round against Parker Porter and Rodrigo Nascimento. He's going to be the taller guy by 1 inch. 6'3" to Olenek's 6'2", but Olenek's going to have the 80-inch reach to Daukaus' 76. And while Olenek comes in at 43 years old and Daukaus at 30, you know, we've seen the old guy magic work its work its way time and time again. So,
You're a big fan of that old guy magic, aren't you?
But, I think, you know, Daukaus, one of the biggest things that just concerned me today was looking at his interview, and I see he has the black belt. He's got the wrestling background. He's been doing it forever. He might be a better grappler than his brother, who's a high-level black belt. I don't think you can mess around with that game with Olenek. And he's saying how maybe he wants to get off his submissions against Olenek, and you better not do that unless you have this guy, like, 75% knocked out.
You'd hope that he just feels confident in himself and he's just, you know, saying what he feels he needs to say. You have to imagine Chris Daukaus wants this fight to stay on the feet. You have to imagine he wants to exploit the fact that he's one of the lighter heavyweights with ridiculously quick hands, which is something for Alexei Oleinik I'm specifically worried about, because at 42, what's going to go? Your reaction time. So you got this young hotshot coming in here with ridiculous boxing hand speed. Oleinik has no problem covering up to fight another day. So while I'm hesitant to take these young guys that are kind of juiced in the money line, I do find myself leaning Daukaus here. I did find a play I like. Daukaus in round one or two, minus 105. I think if it's going any longer than that, I think it's a problem. Oleinik very rarely goes to decision. Like he went against Werdum, and that was his first one since 2016. I like Daukaus to get a finish, and rather than pick away, I think that's what I'll go. Round one or two, minus 105. And again, if you're feeling crazy, I guess you can take Oleinik by sub plus 240.
Yeah, but I think it's a lot to ask to see four heavyweight favorites win on the same card, but I can't help but pick each and every one of them. I'm parlaying Daukaus out here. He's going to be with Sergey Spivak, another heavyweight fight that we talked about earlier. And that'll be connected with one more fight coming up. So that's a play I put out a little earlier in the week. And, you know, the more I sit here and get anxious and think about all the ways that Oleinik could get it to the ground, you know, Daukaus has that footwork, like you're saying, and that athleticism advantage and the quick hands. So, you know, at the end of it, that's my pick. I can't get too cute dog hunting.
Nah, I agree. I like Daukaus here. I mean, he needs to get it done. A loss to Oleinik, while a sub loss, you know, everybody, you know, takes their lumps, he'll be all right. I do think that it would really start to kind of show his ceiling, whereas a win here, he'll have his pick of the litter, you know, maybe even an Arlovsky fight or whatever will be next as he continues to plug away. I think you had a really strong play on this next fight here, no?
Yeah.
Oh, no, not this next one. I'd cut this out.
So the next fight should be
stupid.
Very entertaining. And I don't think I necessarily have a great play on this one, but Charles Rosa versus Derek Minner, I think we're guaranteed a good time when we tune in for this one. Rosa has much more UFC experience at 4-4, but he hasn't fought the biggest of names in his wins, whereas in his losses, it's been Bryce Mitchell, Shane Burgos, Yair Rodriguez, Dennis Ivor. He's fighting out of American Top Team, even though he's fast and strong. He's switched stance, does it well. And you know, Derek Minner coming in with 22 career submissions, 21 in the first round, and, you know, moving over to Glory MMA, he's got a great coach in James Krause. I don't think that that necessarily means he completely calms down and changes the way he fights, but, you know, it's good to know that he's got someone in his corner that is going to be coaching him a little bit better than when he was at Disorderly Conduct. And, you know, I think Rosa and Minner, you're looking at two guys that normally have a big advantage on the ground, and I don't think either guy has an advantage on the ground here. So this fight might be playing out on the feet, and to much people, you know, a lot of people's surprise, this thing could go the distance.
That's what leads me to my play, which, again, really tough to pick a winner in this fight. I do lean Charles Rosa with his ability to be a little bit better of a striker. That being said, Derek Minor is, I mean, he's a veteran's veteran, man. I mean, he's fought a million times in a million different promotions, man. You can never count that guy out. That being said, his best way of win will be by submission. And Charles Rosa, that BJJ black belt, is going to be really, really hard to submit. So that being said, I do think that the ground games negate each other. I think this fight takes on the feet, and I like the over 1.5 -158. Honestly, I like, as I just kind of was putting it together now while we were talking, why don't you just parlay that to Chris Daukaus money line real quick for +155? I mean, I always like, I don't know why, I kind of like to parlay fights that are close together, in proximity on the card. So maybe I guess I don't have to wait too long. But yeah,
everyone loves a quick, I like cash. Why not? I personally think I might sit this one out. Well, you know,
I've never heard that before.
It means not put a full unit on it. So if anything, I think that Rosa's got the better stand-up, more varied stand-up. And if you want to go crazy here, Charles Rosa by knockout is +850. So if you think that Minner's going to gas out like he normally does, and I get that I was saying, you know, I might like it to go to decision. Sometimes when you see a price that crazy for a guy that, you know, we don't really know how Minner looks on extended points on his feet if he doesn't have the grappling advantage. Yeah, yeah.
Didn't Minner recently switch camps? So I kind of like what Glory MMA is doing with people, with their fighters, and I like where they keep everybody's head at. Minner's only 30 years old, man.
Yeah, I really don't like Rosa by submission at +150. That doesn't seem to make sense. The Rosa by points at +350 makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, I mean, that being said, why not just take the over 1.5 and parlay it to Chris Daukaus real quick?
You know, a little quarter unit bet, I want to get it nice and juicy.
Yeah, do it. Do it on on air. Do it for me.
I'm still taking a look. Still taking a look here. But, you know, I don't want to jump the gun too early on that. But I feel like I could end up playing a little prop there. And, you know, I usually release all my plays if you want to follow me on Twitter. So that TV Scout and MMA, you can see what I end up choosing. So
fair enough.
Going to the next fight, co-main event of the evening. And we talked about this one at the top. Ketlin Vieira versus Yana Kunitskaya. And Vieira, with her one loss in her career, coming against Aldana with a brutal round one knockout where she was definitely out cold and, you know, took the record, you know, necessary time off, came back, had a great fight against Jara Eubanks, and coming in against Kunitskaya here, you know, they come in sizing up well, where Kunitskaya is used to having a little bit of a reach advantage, I feel. And Vieira is probably going to be the thicker fighter and someone that I think is going to be able to dominate in the grappling, dominate in the stand-up. And I think that the line might not be even priced enough here because Vieira, I think, just is going to win this fight no matter where it goes. I think Kunitskaya just, you know, anytime she's faced that step up in competition, I don't think it's gone necessarily well for her. And, you know, against Marianne Hanau, you know, who she does get the win against, you know, someone with a little bit more of a killer instinct might be able to finish her in that fight. So I don't think Kunitskaya is going to be able to just play the, you know, clinch up and hold against the fence for, you know, 15 minutes like she did with Stolyarenko.
Oh, it's not going to work here. It's not going to work. Listen, in Jana's last four wins, her last four wins have been by decision, and her last four losses have been by finish. That's not good. It's just not ideal. And Vieira is a beast, man. Yeah, she lost to Aldana, but Irene Aldana is people. Everybody and their grandma was picking her to beat Holly Holm, which I found ridiculous. But, you know, it's all good. But, you know, she beat Kat Tsangano, Sarah McMahon, Ashley Evans-Smith, you know. Soraya Eubanks, you know, is this the top of the division? Not necessarily, but she's, you know, fighting legitimate fighters, you know, not the complete bottom of the barrel. So I do think that Vieira is the much better fighter. I wouldn't feel comfortable playing any money on Jana in any way, shape, or form until she shows me something else in her career.
In an interview, was talking about how, you know, she learned a lesson from that knockout loss and really changed her approach in the stand-up. And you could see her much more patient and winning rounds on the feet against Eubanks. And the other way for her to win, you know, she's got the Brazilian national team wrestling background on top of a jiu-jitsu black belt and a judo black belt. I mean, she could get to this fight to the floor however which way she wants. And if that happens, it's not going to be pretty for Kunitskaya. I think value play on this card, the fact that you could get Vieira by knockout or submission at plus 260, I'm pulling the trigger before weigh-ins. I don't need to see the weigh-ins.
Wow. Wow, that's a big play. Yeah, I actually had that written down. I also had the under 2.5 at plus 210 written down. I just feel and I get so freaking nervous, man, betting ladies fights to go under. I mean, I just would be kicking myself so hard that, like, when the lady fight goes to decision, like, oh, of course it did. Like, why wouldn't, you know what I mean? It's just so tough. But that being said, when was Yana's last loss by decision? Since she, ever? No, never, right? She's lost five times.
And then one by decision. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right, but that was like her earliest loss. So, geez, yeah, listen. Yeah, I mean, it's risky.
Yeah, but plus, I don't like gambling. The payout's risky. Nice and juicy. Sometimes you got to risk the biscuit if you want to make that money, you know? So, you know, to me, I'm not throwing a full unit on that.
All right.
Or am I? Well, I think probably a halfy, you know, plus 260, you could profit nicely. And if it doesn't play out that way and it goes to the decision and blah, 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 you know, Vieira is closing out my parlay, so that's okay if I don't hit on this little, you know, half a unit prop. So, hey, it sounds like we're taking Vieira. Let's get to the main event of the evening. Curtis Blaydes versus Derek the Black Beast.
Which we were actually supposed to get, but then got moved.
Yeah, you know, they almost never booked this fight. I think that they didn't want to, you know, see Lewis kind of get grappled around and stuff, and eventually they got around to booking it, which, you know, I think I've seen Lewis out there doing the miles on the road. It seems like, you know, he's getting himself ready with the cardio, and it's great. I just I know that Blaydes is going to come in, shoot those takedowns, ragdoll.
But wait, you didn't hear? You didn't hear? Derek Lewis is an All-American wrestler now.
Versus Curtis Razor Blaydes. Yeah,
that's what he said.
Very entertaining stuff. But we know that Lewis, while his one of his best attributes is his ground and pound, and that's probably where he could be his most dominant, as we saw him absolutely obliterate Olenek in his last outing. You know, he doesn't really have a path to get there all the time. You know, and a lot of times it comes off the knockdowns and all that, but. When he doesn't have the clear athletic advantage, I see him having difficulty getting inside and making consistent contact. And I'm not going to sit here and hold my breath waiting for a Lewis knockout over five rounds against a guy that's going to be constantly eating into that gas tank. taken away from that cardio. And, you know, if you think that you could pick a way that this fight's going to end, you can get plus money any which way if you're betting on Curtis Blaydes. Actually, as I say that and pull up the line, we have the knockout all the way down to minus 130. That was plus money earlier in the week. And now the submission, which was at plus 500, is all the way up to plus 1,000, which brings me to my point.
What?
Curtis Blaydes on an interview with James Lynch before the first fight, talking about how he's been working on, you know, searching for the neck, getting some more finishes on the ground. He hasn't been able to do it in his career, working on his jiu-jitsu. At plus 1,000, I mean,
I'm playing play on that. What are you, crazy?
That was at plus 130. We're looking at submission was at like plus 500. These lines have moved crazily because everyone thinks it's going to be the elbows, the ground and pound. You know, Lewis likes to give up his back when it stands up, and Blaydes is a big boy. So this is someone that could definitely take advantage of him as far as physicality goes. And you know he's got the technique. I really think that the Blaydes plus 1,000 submission isn't, you know, the worst play here. And if you want to even say, oh, this is going to go over, this is going to, you know what? I think we've seen before that Lewis tends to take his time. Olenek was a round two knockout. You know, I did bet the over in that one, and I got beat on it. Latifi went to decision. Ivanov went to decision. Volkov, round three knockout. You know, Ngannou, unanimous decision. I know you were drilling this into me before we got on here, and I kept on looking further into it, and I think you got a point. You know, we could see this go a little bit further, and if Lewis gets real tired, he leaves that neck out in the open, bango, you know, maybe do we go full unit on that?
Listen, a full unit at plus 1,000, I mean, the idea is that hopefully you're up units and that maybe that unit could, like, bring you home majorly. So as some may remember, if you've listened through this whole thing, thank you for listening. This fight will round out my second parlay. I had over 1.5 in the Wineland Castaneda fight, and I'm going to parlay that with over 1.5 here. You know, I don't like over 2.5. I don't like going into the second round, like starting round three. Like, I'm not playing that. I think that Lewis has taken time off. I think Lewis is training hard, and I think that while Blaydes should dominate him, it should be for longer than 7 minutes and 30 seconds, because Lewis has been training really hard for that. You know, if he's been training all this time and gets whatever ground and pounded in 2 minutes and 30 seconds, I think that's a really poor showing. And I think that the UFC will be remiss to put him in a main event spot again, as much as he's a favorite. Like, you can't, you gotta give a showing. Nobody expects him to win, and that's fine, but you gotta give it something. You gotta go out there and try, like Masvidal style against Usman. You have to go out there and weather the storm.
You know, I think Lewis does come in here a little bit more seriously. Someone actually asked him about the Mars rover, and he wasn't having any of it. He was actually a little bit pissed off they were wasting his time with the question. And then, you know, he kind of humored it a little because he knows he's a funny guy, but, like, you know, it seemed like he was on point.
Sorry, by the way, that parlay comes in at plus 103. Over 1.5, Wineland and Castaneda. Over 1.5, Lewis Blaydes comes in at plus 103. So I think those are two things that really, really should happen. And, I mean, they're juiced for a reason. The over 1.5 is minus 200 in this fight. They think it. And listen, you really don't think so? Then play that. Play the under 1.5 if you really feel that strongly the other way. Otherwise, like I said, I think that Lewis is going to really fight hard to stay in it as long as he can. And I think that of all things, that Blaydes is not necessarily a quick finisher. I mean, he actually doesn't even have his only round one finish is in, his only round one finish is in 2014. So yeah, he only finishes people in the second round.
It's like
literally
minus 450 for Blaydes and plus 330 for Lewis. I don't know how you do that in a high level heavyweight fight where any guy can win at any second. So, you know, we're staying away from the money line on this one.
You can get Lewis that's by KO plus 500.
So you could play plus 1,000 on the sub and plus 500 on Lewis KO. Sit back and have a little bit of fun and lose both bets, possibly.
Exactly. When he survives the whole time, so and play, it goes to some
the
good boring decision,
ass decision. Is probably a super crazy line also. And let's not completely rule that out, because it's not like Blades wasn't able to finish, you know, Volkov. Like that one went all the way. So if, let's just say, you know, humor me here. If this fight was to go the distance, it's plus 270. Okay, yeah, you're right. I'm not playing it. That's not juiced enough. I need like plus 500.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Listen, I think that pretty much wraps it up. Yeah, I mean, this card was, man, it was a grueling card. I'll be honest, I think it's quite a sketchy card, to be quite honest, in terms of betting.
Yeah.
I'm still really excited for it in terms of watching. It's going to start early, like 4:30, 5 o'clock on the East Coast.
How many fights on the prelims in like 3 hours? We'll have some good pacing.
Yeah, for sure. Some good pacing. I'm really, really excited. I hope you cash some bets.
Thank you guys for making it this far. I know this was a long card, and like we said, it's going to be very entertaining. And while you might not know some of the names, we hope you give you a little bit of an education and a background on these guys so you know what's going on with the fights happening.
We have a really awesome announcement. We are officially on Apple Podcasts. I personally think that that's a huge deal. That's how I listen to my podcast. So for me to be able to listen to my own podcast, subscribe, like, you know, my own podcast, our own podcast, I think that's awesome. So please go give us a follow, a subscribe, and a referral and some reviews on Apple Podcasts. Also, please give us a subscribe and like on our YouTube channel, Chronic Combat Conversations. Please follow us on Twitter at Chronic Combat or on Instagram at Chronic Combat Conversations. You can find my partner, TB Scouting MMA, on Instagram, Twitter, Verdict and Tapology, and you can find me the MMA Guru. That's the _ MMA Guru on Instagram, Twitter, Verdict and Tapology. If you don't already, please go follow us there. Thank you so much for listening. Let's cash these bets, and we'll see you next week.